It's the Thursday Impressionistic News Hour from Kill Radio. For the 2nd of June, 2005, here from Los Angeles, beaming out into the world. We've been down so much in the last few days. Hours and hours where we're not up. And then about 15 minutes ago, we came back up again. And so, here I am trying to do this. Besides, there's really been no news. It's just a sad state of affairs here in this world, which doesn't mean that there isn't plenty to do. It just means that there's always a question of why. But that's why it's the Impressionistic News Hour, don't you know? So all of my beautiful listeners, press your ears against the speakers. We're back at it again. It's time. It's Roland Kirk back again. That means it's Kill Radio's Impressionistic News Hour. Released a report calling the prison camp at Guantanamo Bay the gulag of our time. General Richard Myers, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, said the prison camp was a model facility and pointed out that 1,300 Korans had been handed out at the prison in the last 4 years. Brigadier General Jay Hood, the camp's commander, said that an investigation at Guantanamo Bay had uncovered 5 incidents of Koran abuse, but none involved toilets. Protesters rallied around Koran abuse in Egypt, Pakistan, Jordan, Malaysia, and in Lebanon, where they chanted, "America is the biggest Satan." This is the weekly news and review from Harpers.org. And killradio.org. This was posted May 31st by Paul Ford on the Harpers.org website and concerns the news of the previous week. Meca-Cola was on sale in 56 countries and was the second most popular soft drink in France. President George W. Bush promised $50 million in aid to Palestine. The commander-in-chief of Bolivia's armed forces denied that the military was planning a coup. Japan announced it would close down its fund for World War II-era sex slaves. And North Korea refused to rule out a preemptive nuclear strike. Hundreds of thousands of people marched for gay rights in São Paulo, Brazil. A man caught a 124-pound catfish in the Mississippi River, and Sylvester Stallone was making a movie about Edgar Allan Poe. Representative Spencer Baucus of Alabama said that a routine by television host Bill Maher bordered on treason. Maher had said that the Army had already picked all of the low-flying fruit, like Lindy England, and now needed warm bodies. Israeli Finance Minister Benjamin Netanyahu gave an interview with a lit cigar in his jacket. "Can't you smell the smoke?" asked his interviewer. "What do you mean?" replied Netanyahu. "You are burning up," said the reporter. In Syracuse, New York, President Bush gave a speech so boring that it reduced a little girl named Brittany Fish to tears. And in Greece, New York, Bush discussed his plans for Social Security. "You got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in," he said, to kind of catapult the propaganda. Mr. Bush always says the things that he thinks people think he should be saying. Scientists uncovered the part of the brain that allows people to perceive sarcasm, and experts on humor said that the joke was dead. In California, the owners of a chicken were fined for letting it cross the road. The fine was later dismissed. Officials in Zurich decided that a massive teddy bear in bondage regalia could not be put on display as part of the city's Teddy Summer project. And a researcher found that Malcolm X had enjoyed sex with men. NASA planned to put a laser in orbit around the moon. In the West Bank, Israeli soldiers broke into the home of a Palestinian family so that they could watch a soccer game. A San Diego doctor was training a dog named Ginger to detect cancer by sniffing human urine. And two teenagers in Marysville, California, hacked into their school's computer system to change their grades. They accidentally altered the grades of all 18,697 students in the school district, and they were arrested. A judge ruled that stickers that encourage students to question the theory of evolution, placed on science textbooks in Cobb County, Georgia, violated the principle of the separation of church and state. Of course, those judges, they're so bad, right? 34,452 stickers must be scraped off in order to comply with the ruling. A hamster-borne virus transmitted through donated human organs was linked to the deaths of six people since 2003. In New Jersey, State Assemblyman Craig Stanley was fighting to rename the Devils hockey team. "The merchandise, the paraphernalia," he said, "is based on the actual demonic devil. 300,000 residents of Beijing have been moved out of their homes to make room for the 2008 Olympics. Some of those who protested the evictions have been jailed." Pretoria, South Africa, changed its name to Tshwane, which means "we are the same." In Denmark, a Lutheran minister who was suspended for preaching that God does not exist was allowed to return to the pulpit. And in London, Big Ben broke down for 90 minutes. There was a public masturbation festival in San Francisco. In North Carolina, a man was released from prison after serving 35 years of his life sentence for stealing a $140 television set. And in Waxahachie, Texas, the high school student yearbook neglected to include a girl's name in a photo caption, referring to her instead as "Black Girl." In Indianapolis, the parents of a 9-year-old boy were appealing a judge's ruling that prohibits them from raising their child as a Wiccan. A study of 85 infant boys found that the chemical phthalate, which is found in plastics and cosmetics, leads to smaller penises. And a road crew in San Jose, California, dug a fresh 10 by 15 foot pothole so that Terminator Arnold Schwarzenegger could be photographed filling it. The nine members of Thailand's anti-corruption commission were found guilty of corruption. In Iraq, bombs killed dozens of civilians and soldiers. Two soldiers died when an army helicopter was shot down northeast of Baghdad, and 40,000 Iraqi troops and 10,000 United States soldiers launched Operation Lightning, which is intended to seal roads in and out of Baghdad. Iraqi militants bragged of eating wild raw cats with their bare hands. France rejected the proposed constitution for the European Union. Germany ratified it. King Mswati III of Swaziland married his 11th wife. And the space probe Voyager 1 entered the Helios sheath, 8.7 billion miles from Earth. Well, that's the update of the weekly news and review. This has been your faithless host, Bennett, prouder than ever to call himself a faithless host, saying thanks for listening. That was the DJ RX. And amazing. That's just amazing. Must have taken him ages to do that. That's Imagine a Walk on the Wild Side by RX. All right, on April 30th, Noam Chomsky gave a speech about the United States' involvement in Vietnam. And I guess it's more of a sign that it's not been an extremely busy week, and I have no interviews. So I want to listen for a while to Mr. Chomsky. This is a great, very interesting speech. So Noam Chomsky, he doesn't just talk about Vietnam. He talks about Abu Ghraib. He talks about Iraq. He talks about the current administration. There's a comparison going on here, but this is his good shit, man. This is good stuff. Noam Chomsky from April 30th.
Vietnam was regarded as a keystone of the arch for that. Well, you know, by 1968, it was pretty clear to anyone with eyes open that Vietnam would be lucky to survive. It wasn't going to be a model for anyone. The virus was destroyed. The region had been inoculated. So the war became, as McGeorge Bundy later said, former Harvard dean who was national security advisor for Kennedy, he said, after 1965, with the staggering mass slaughter in Indonesia, he said the U.S. war in Indochina became excessive. In other words, costing us too much. So it was kind of like a bad tactical decision to keep going after the basic war aims had been won. That's the core of the issue, I think, and that's why business turned against the war had by 1968 and a year or two later at the extreme dissident left of intellectual opinion, you were allowed to call the war a mistake that began with blundering efforts to do good. Well, the idea that's in the heads of the population that it was fundamentally wrong and immoral and not a mistake, that has to be driven from their minds, clearly. And there have been huge efforts to do that ever since, with kind of mixed effects. The polls remain more or less the same. On the other hand, there has been an effect. So, for example, knowledge of the war is extraordinary in the United States. There was actually only been one major academic study, as far as I know, of what people believe about the war, and it's mind-boggling. A couple of years ago, they found that people were asked to give an estimate of the number of Vietnamese who died during the war, and the mean estimate was 100,000, which is about 5% of the official U.S. figure and probably 2 or 3% of the actual figure. The authors of the study point out that it's as if you took a poll in Germany and asked people how many Jews died in the Holocaust, and the mean judgment was 300,000, in which case we'd think that there's a slight problem in Germany. But here, it's kept from us. We're not supposed to think about it. The results are even worse because it turns out that this poll was taken in a leading Northeastern university, which is pretty politically active for the general population. Might be even crazier. Right before the November election last year, I happened to be away and, you know, trying to find out what was going on in the world and in a hotel, so I turned on television, something I usually try to avoid. But I got an interesting program. There was a program, I think it was on CNN or something, an hour-long serious discussion led by the chief media critic of the Washington Post, Howard Kurtz, with lots of deep thinkers. And the program was called America's Vietnam Obsession. And it was about the strange obsession of the United States with Vietnam after all these years. What they were talking about is, you know, did Kerry deserve the bronze medal and all that kind of stuff. Well, what the program demonstrated is that America's Vietnam obsession, at least among liberal elite opinion, is zero. There's only one question that arises about Kerry in Vietnam, and that is, what was he doing in 1969 deep in the Mekong Delta 7 which had been practically devastated, killing South Vietnamese, 7 years after John F. Kennedy had launched an outright war against South Vietnam, focused on places like the Mekong Delta, and 15 years after the United States had instituted a Latin American-style terror state in South Vietnam, which, as Long just mentioned, had killed 70,000 people in the Mekong Delta alone. Well, whatever happened in the whole country. So what was Kerry doing there 15 years after this? Right in the midst, in 1969, which incidentally happened to be the peak period of U.S. atrocities in South Vietnam. That was the post-Tet accelerated pacification campaign, which was carrying out extraordinary atrocities, of which one became famous, My Lai, which became famous because you could blame it on poor, uneducated, half-crazed GIs in the field who didn't know who was shooting at them next and did commit an atrocity. But as it happened, that was a minor footnote to a major mass murder campaign, Operation Wheeler Walla Walla, which was organized by nice guys like us and sitting in air-conditioned offices who were plotting B-52 raids on villages and, you know, killing who knows how many tens of thousands of people. So therefore, they're immune because they're our kind. But My Lai was those guys. So it's allowed. You're allowed to be angry about it. In fact, there was.
So, of course, that's not dissimilar to Abu Ghraib, right? Let's go ahead. I want to go a little bit ahead here in the speech, and here we go. Still Noam Chomsky from April 30th, 2005, on the 30th anniversary of Vietnam's end.
When Kennedy sent the U.S. Air Force to start bombing South Vietnam, authorized the use of napalm, initiated the use of chemical warfare to destroy food crops so as to drive the population into the concentration camps, which had been given various names, ultimately many millions of them. Story was that they had to be protected behind barbed wire from the South Vietnamese resistance, which they were willingly supporting. And it was there was no controversy over the fact that they were willingly supporting them. That was understood. It was recognized on all sides. If you look at the internal documents and so on, they agreed that it was a political war against a military war. The South Vietnamese had political strength and the U.S. had military strength. So therefore, the U.S. naturally shifted the war to the arena in which they could prevail, military strength, which is why the atrocities took place. The South Vietnamese who were the victims of the war were labeled aggressors, or as some put it, Adlai Stevenson, a liberal hero, Kennedy's ambassador to the UN, called it internal aggression. Interesting new concept. It was an assault from within, according to John F. Kennedy. And the terminology was made some sense. The technical definition of aggression in U.S. Army manuals included as one type of aggression political warfare. That's one type of aggression. So yes, they were indeed the aggressors in their own country, and we were defending ourselves by slaughtering them. And the U.S. was entirely aware of this. So Kennedy's ambassador in South Vietnam, Henry Cabot Lodge, was cabling back that the generals are all we've got. We've lost everybody else. But there's a problem with the generals, he said. They have not been able to construct an efficient police state like Hitler's Germany. So therefore, we've got some problems. We've got to get over this and let them do it. Well, return to the reshaping of history. After the war, when you have to start reconstructing it the right way in people's minds, we get to, say, President Carter, 1977, who gave his view of the war. This, again, is at the kind of liberal extreme. He said, we owe Vietnam no debt because the destruction was mutual. You want to see how mutual it was. Take a walk in Plains, Georgia, and, you know, the Mekong Delta, and you'll see. What was interesting about that comment is that it received no reaction. But nobody was appalled. Yeah, okay. Destruction was mutual, so we don't owe them any debt. But by the time you get to Bush number one, there's a much harder line. There is a debt. It's theirs. They're the ones who are guilty. Destruction was not mutual. It took place here in Texas. But he said, we're nice guys. So, in his words, we seek only answers without the threat of retribution for the past. In other words, we're willing to forget all the crimes that you committed against us, and we only seek answers because we're such nice guys. Now, what are the answers? Well, the answers are to the one moral issue that remains after destroying South Vietnam, namely the missing in action, who were somehow shot down over Iowa, you know, by some strange way. But as long as that gets answers, everything's fine. We don't need any answers about the millions of corpses in South Vietnam or about the hundreds of thousands of victims of chemical warfare, which we have recently learned, though it doesn't get reported, was at about twice the intensity of what was reported during the war, and according to U.S. analysts, left about 2.1 million victims. We don't have to need answers for the deformed fetuses in Saigon hospitals, and the people who are still dying, including people who born after, years after the chemical warfare officially stopped, but are still contracting serious diseases, cancer, mutilation, and so on. But we don't have to ask about that. And in fact, it almost never gets reported. Actually, sometimes it does, to be fair. There was an article in the science section of the New York Times a couple of years ago that suggested that it's really not a good idea to ignore this. We should study it. And the reason we should study it is that it's an unusually good experimental situation because we have a control group. It's only South Vietnam that was subjected to this particular war crime, not North Vietnam, but to have the same genes. So we can study the effects of incredibly high concentrations of dioxin, one of the worst carcinogens known. We can study the effects of this on humans by comparing the North Vietnamese and the South Vietnamese, and maybe we could learn something from that that would be useful for us. So really it might be a good idea to look for answers. We go on a couple of years, and we get to Robert McNamara's memoirs 10 years ago in retrospect. The reaction to the book was, I won't talk about the book, but the reaction to it was extremely interesting. The hawks condemned McNamara for treachery. The doves applauded him because they were vindicated. And this includes, you know, the real people way out at the edge. I mean, the religious leaders who were opposing the war on moral grounds. They were vindicated. Why? Because McNamara issued an apology, which is true. He issued an apology to Americans, not the Vietnamese, not a word about that. He issued an apology to Americans for not telling them early enough that the war was probably going to be too costly to Americans. So the doves are vindicated. Well, you know, tells you something. In McNamara's retrospect, it's mostly U.S. government sources, but he quotes one outside expert. That's a good choice. It's Bernard Fall, who incidentally was an extreme hawk, but an unusual and a military historian and a Vietnamese specialist and knew a lot about the country. In fact, was killed there. So it was a good choice. He was unusual among Vietnamese specialists in that he actually cared about the people, even though he was a super hawk. McNamara quotes him. He says that in 1965 is when the official war started. You know, the U.S. started bombing North Vietnam and sent troops to the South. In 1965, McNamara says that, he refers to Bernard Fall, a great expert, and he said Fall was providing encouraging news, McNamara says, encouraging news which helped persuade Washington that the U.S. effort could not fail. So that was really good news. What did Fall actually say? What he said is, in 1965, he said what changed the character of the war was not the bombing of North Vietnam, not the sending of U.S. soldiers to the South, but the decision to escalate to unlimited aerial warfare against South Vietnam at the price of literally pounding the place to bits. That was the encouraging news, because he added, well, in the short run, the U.S. probably can't lose. So Washington was very encouraged. The Washington liberals were very encouraged because Fall said they could not lose at the price of pounding the place to bits. McNamara goes on and says that in 1967, Fall reversed his stand and felt that U.S. power and technology might not prevail. Again, he doesn't quote him, but here's what he said. He said, Vietnam as a cultural and historic entity is threatened with extinction under the blows of the largest military machine ever unleashed against an area this size, and U.S. force might prevail, he felt, extinguishing the country. So that's, if you can try to figure out what goes on in someone's head who reports that sort of thing, let me know about it. The operative values of the U.S. war are very well illustrated by comparison of the bombing of the South and the bombing of the North. The bombing of the South was vastly more intense and started years earlier. But if you look at the records, we now have a rich array of records from the Pentagon Papers and other internal sources and memoirs like McNamara's, and they're all the same. The bombing of the North was meticulously planned. You know, very careful thinking about should we go here, should we escalate a little, and so on and so forth. Huge record. The bombing of the South is barely mentioned. There weren't any plans. You just do it, you know. Bomb the place to bits, extinguish the country. It's also true of the anti-war movement, unfortunately. Most of the protest was against the bombing of the North, which was a crime. Hideous crime, but peripheral. I mean, the bombing of the South, the attack on the South, the counterinsurgency and the bombing and everything else were far worse. Among the sort of in the establishment, a protest was almost entirely against the bombing of the North. Bombing of the South was barely mentioned. Well, what's the difference between them? Unfortunately, it's regrettably easy to answer, to give the explanation. The bombing of the South was costless to the United States. The population was totally defenseless. So you could bomb them as much as you want. Do you want to drive the country to extinction? Not going to cost you anything. And there's not very much international protest because the West accepts the moral principles of Western imperialism. After all, it's been going on for hundreds of years. If you want to destroy defenseless people, that's your right. On the other hand, the bombing of the North was dangerous for the United States. You're bombing the North, you might be hitting Russian ships in the Haiphong Harbor, or an internal Chinese railroad, which happens to pass through North Vietnam. And there are embassies in Hanoi, which might not be happy about it, Western embassies, and so on. So bombing the North carried a certain risk for the United States, and therefore was meticulously planned. But bombing the South, being completely costless, is scarcely even mentioned. Well, unfortunately, that's easy to talk about and to explain. And the same is true of the very rare cases like My Lai, where atrocities are acknowledged, as long as you can blame them on somebody else, not like us. You'll notice that the same is going on in Iraq. What happened at Abu Ghraib, for example, is criminal, but it's much easier to blame it on whatever her name is, England, some uneducated person who's sort of forced into the army because it's a mercenary army, the poor, and to absolve, say, Donald Rumsfeld or George Tenet or George Bush, who are the people who are responsible. Actually, Human Rights Watch just put out a report on that, which won't be reported, I'm sure. Same in, say, Fallujah. There were reports about atrocities in Fallujah. One Marine killed somebody who was apparently wounded or not resisting. That became a big atrocity. What about the turning Fallujah into Grozny, you know, just smashing the city to dust? Well, that's not an atrocity. What about capturing the general hospital the first day and forcing the patients to lie on the floor, taking them out of bed, forcing them to lie on the floor, hands manacled behind their back, under guard? That wasn't a secret. There's a big front page picture in the New York Times about it. I mean, that is a grave breach of the Geneva Conventions, and George Bush, in fact, is subject to the death penalty for that under U.S. law, under the U.S. War Crimes Act. That's literally true. U.S. War Crimes Act of 1996, passed by a Republican Congress, makes grave breaches of the Geneva Conventions a crime punishable by death. Actually, that's part of the reason, I presume, why Bush's legal counsel, Alberto Gonzalez, now Attorney General, advised him to rescind the Geneva Conventions because he said it would reduce the likelihood of punishment. Well, not bad advice. Okay, I'm barely skimming the surface, and I'll stop here. But the general point is that we're not talking about some, you know, exotic tribe we don't understand. We're talking about ourselves, you know, the most important topic, the one we're supposed to understand best, and the one that's certainly most important to us. And unless people like us become capable of looking in the mirror honestly, the biology's only experiment with higher intelligence is likely to prove quite brief.
Yeah, that's Noam Chomsky on April 30th, 2005, just a little more than a month ago, discussing Vietnam and its relationship to us today, because it still has a powerful effect. This is the Thursday Impressionistic News Hour for June 2nd, 2005. And here's Tori Amos.
My plow, lose my mind.
Yeah, that's Tori in Australia just a couple weeks ago. I've got some time, I thought about maybe looking at some of the stupider and dumber laws that we have in this country. But really, by calling them dumb and stupid, maybe that's not fair. It means that the people who wrote them are dumb. And it's literally dumb, because the ridiculousness of many of these laws, some of them are just outrageous by themselves, but the ridiculousness has to be in the way they are phrased, because these people don't really know how to phrase things. Now, for me to say that, you know, then I should give examples of that. So in Los Angeles, for instance, it is illegal for a man to beat his wife with a strap wider than 2 inches without her consent. Can you see that that's a language thing? Of course, if you have a strap that I guess is only an inch wide, that's okay. Los Angeles, though, let's see. Toads may not be licked in Los Angeles. And zoot suits are still prohibited in Los Angeles. And this affects me personally because of a court thing that happened to me back in 2003. Interestingly, it is illegal to cry on the witness stand in court. Somehow, I know that that's a language issue. But up in San Francisco, persons who are classified as quote-unquote ugly may not walk down any street. You see, that guy in the car got that one. It is illegal to pile horse manure higher than 6 feet on a street corner. And it is illegal to wipe one's car with used underwear, all in San Francisco. In Hollywood, it is illegal to drive more than 2,000 sheep down Hollywood Boulevard at any one time. I guess you can do a few hundred at a time. In Carmel, California, when Clint Eastwood was the mayor, he repealed a law that said that ice cream may not be eaten while standing on the sidewalk. I guess Clint thought that was kind of a dumb law. However, there is still a law in the books in Carmel that women may not wear high heels in the city limits. In Pasadena, it is illegal for a secretary to be alone in a room with her boss. In Palm Springs, it is illegal to walk a camel down Palm Drive or Canyon Drive between the hours of 4 and 6 p.m. You may not play percussion instruments on the beach in Santa Monica. See what I mean? These are some dumb laws, and they're all over the place. We can look at some of these things. In Alabama, for instance, it is illegal to wear a fake mustache that causes laughter in church. By that language, I think it's even possible that you wouldn't have to be in the church if people were just laughing because you had a fake mustache on and they were thinking about it. That could make wearing that fake mustache illegal. If you put salt on a railroad track in Alabama, you can be punished by death. In Alaska, it is considered an offense to push a live moose out of a moving airplane. Of course, I hope so. I mean, that would be terrible, you know. In Arizona, You may not have more than two dildos in a house, and it is illegal for men and women over the age of 18 to have less than one tooth missing, visible when smiling. It is also illegal in California to give or receive oral sex. Now, since the majority of American porn movies are made in California, it's illegal to give or receive oral sex? Boy, those movies are illegal. Damn, who would have thought that? In Connecticut, if you have a green piece of food, natural foodstuffs, in order to consider it to be a pickle, it must bounce. It is also illegal in Connecticut to dispose of used razor blades, and you may not educate dogs there. In Florida, it is illegal to have sexual relations with a porcupine. Also, only the missionary position is legal when having sex. It is also considered an offense in Florida to shower naked. In Georgia, it is illegal to use profanity in front of a dead body in a funeral home or in a coroner's office. It is against the law to tie a giraffe to a telephone pole or a street lamp. And it is illegal for a chicken to cross the road in Georgia. The police will come and get you. In Idaho, this has to be a language one, it is illegal for a man to give his sweetheart a box of candy weighing less than 50 pounds. If you ride a merry-go-round on a Sunday in Idaho, that's a crime. If a police officer approaches a vehicle and suspects that the occupants inside that vehicle are engaged in sex, the policeman must either honk or flash his lights and wait for 3 minutes before approaching the car. It is illegal to give a dog whiskey in my home state, Illinois. It is considered an offense to attempt to have sex with one's dog in Illinois. And if the building that you were in is on fire, there's a law forbidding you from eating in that building. It is illegal for a liquor store to sell cold soft drinks or milk in Indiana. You are not allowed, an individual is not allowed to carry a cocktail from the bar to your table. A waiter or waitress has to do it. It is illegal in Indiana for a man to be sexually aroused in public. It is illegal for barbers to threaten to cut off kids' ears in Indiana. In Iowa, one-armed piano players must perform for free. That's what I meant. I mean that, yeah. In Kansas, if two trains meet on the same track, neither shall proceed until the other has passed. All bees that enter the state of Kentucky, all bees entering Kentucky shall be accompanied by certificates of health stating that the apiary from which the bees came was free from infectious diseases. Drunk laws in Kentucky. By law, anyone who has been drinking is sober until he or she, quote-unquote, cannot hold on to the ground. You may not tie an alligator to a fire hydrant in Louisiana. In Maine, it is against the law to step out of an airplane while it is flying. And shoelaces must be tied while walking down the street. In Maryland, it's illegal to take a lion to the movies. Massachusetts. No gorilla is allowed in the back seat of any car. Children may smoke, but they may not purchase cigarettes. It is illegal to be a communist. It is illegal to frighten a pigeon. In Michigan, a woman is not allowed to cut her own hair without her husband's permission. Hamburgers may not be eaten on Sundays in Minnesota. It is illegal to drive around the town square more than 100 times in a single session in Mississippi. It is a felony for a wife to open her husband's mail in Montana. It is illegal to have a sheep in the cab of your truck without a chaperone in Montana. And balls may not be thrown within the city limits of one of the cities in Montana. In New Hampshire, you are not allowed to sell the clothes that you are wearing to pay off a gambling debt. In New Jersey, it is against the law to frown at a police officer. It is illegal to offer whiskey or cigarettes to animals at the local zoo in New Jersey. A raw hamburger may not be sold. And you cannot pump your own gas in Jersey. All gas stations are full service and full service only. In New York, the penalty for jumping off a building is death. Oh, God. Women may go topless in public in New York, providing that it is not being done as a business. It is illegal for a father to call his son a faggot or a queer in an effort to curb girly behavior. In North Carolina, if you and your girlfriend go to a hotel or a motel and you register yourselves as married, you are legally married in North Carolina. It is illegal to have sex in a churchyard in North Carolina. All couples staying overnight in a hotel must have a room with double beds that are at least two feet apart. Making love in the space between the beds is strictly forbidden. I don't know. Beer and pretzels can't be served at the same time in a bar or restaurant in North Dakota. However, it is legal to shoot an Indian on horseback, provided you are in a covered wagon. In Pennsylvania, it is illegal to have over 16 women live in a house together because that constitutes a brothel. However, up to 120 men can live together without breaking a law. And what is that? All fire hydrants must be checked in Pennsylvania 1 hour before a fire. No one is allowed to sleep in a refrigerator or on a refrigerator. However, just a little darker, in South Dakota, if there are more than 5 Native Americans on your property, you can shoot them. There probably are a lot more. I mean, isn't there some kind of ordinance still on the books in Massachusetts that if a Native American walks into your town square, you can shoot them? I don't know. Maybe more than one. But remember not to pile that manure 6 foot high when you're in San Francisco. Okay, just a quick and sort of funny, but probably pointless look at dumb laws on Kill Radio.
I'm free. So free. I'm free. So free. And freedom is the best thing in reality. I'm free.
Those were the Petticoats, I'm Free. That's a 7-inch from the late 70s, maybe early 80s, probably late 70s. So that's it for the Impressionistic News Hour for June 2nd, 2005. I'm your faithless host, Bennett. I'm still waiting for something to happen out in the world. Not necessarily something bad. It'd be great if something really good happened. I still want to hear the right kind of revolution because I know things can be different. So let's break down the ideology and figure it out. We had one great example today. Chomsky. Talking up a storm. You know what I mean? Anyway, this is killradio.org from Los Angeles. I'm Bennett. My music show is on Saturday nights at midnight. It's called The Chill Room. You shouldn't miss it ever. And somehow or other, I know I'll be back next week. on the Impressionistic News. So thanks for listening to Kill Radio. Don't forget to kill your friends. Thank you.